working at San Francisco General Hospital, taking care of homeless people, and noticing that when they would first be brought in, often hypothermic with low temperatures, with electrolytes that were out of whack because of they weren't eating or had intercurrent illness or they were infected, there'd be all of this attention spent on them in the first 24, 48 hours. And then when they were returned to normal labs and no longer infected, everybody lost interest. Now they were just a homeless person and therefore needed to be discharged. And I was just struck, well, gee, we just spent $40,000, you know, to get this person back. And now what they need is maybe $800, $1,000 a month to house them. How is it that we could spend $40,000 on them in the first 3 days and not in any way change the arc of their life, but we can't figure out how to put together the money to house them?
Welcome to A&M Healthcare Industry Group's What's Your Moonshot podcast series, where world-class healthcare leaders seek to solve big problems. Listen as we talk to today's health system CEOs about the journey to achieve their moonshots.
Welcome to A&M's What's Your Moonshot podcast. I'm Larry Kaiser, a managing director at Alvarez & Marsal's Healthcare Industry Group. I'm joined by my co-host, the ninth secretary of the Veterans Administration, the Honorable Dr. David Shulkin. David, we're incredibly fortunate today to welcome to the podcast the president and chief executive officer of the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation, Dr. Mitchell Katz. Dr. Katz took on the role of president and CEO in 2018, overseeing the largest municipal healthcare system in the United States with 11 acute care hospitals, 5 skilled nursing facilities, dozens of community health centers, a home care agency, and an insurance plan. He also oversaw the creation of a modern electronic health record system, increased the number of nurses in the system, developed a modern ambulance transport system, and launched new street outreach programs to ensure the health of homeless New Yorkers. Throughout the pandemic, Dr. Katz provided strategic guidance to Mayor Bill de Blasio while directing his organization's response to the surge of COVID patients, which peaked at 3,700 and required the tripling of ICU capacity at its 11 hospitals. New York City Health and Hospitals treated thousands of New Yorkers, led the city's test and trace operation, and administered more than 1.3 million COVID-19 vaccines. Having come from Los Angeles, Dr. Katz certainly knows how to run a large health system, but obviously faced the challenges that he found in New York head on. Dr. Katz, we're looking forward to talking with you on the podcast today.
Well, it's so great to see you, Larry and David, and I appreciate very much your inviting me.
First of all, I just want to add my congratulations. You're on your sixth year now leading one of the largest healthcare systems, probably the most complex of any metropolitan area. And you've made it through COVID, which obviously the world's eyes were on New York for quite a long period of time. And I think what many people who are in leadership positions in healthcare learned during COVID is about the inequities in healthcare and the difficulties with access. But there's probably no bigger challenge than one of the things that you talk about, and that's the homeless. And I just wanted to know whether you would share a little bit about the type of work that you're working on to address the issues of homelessness and what your goal and objective is in that work.
Well, thanks, David. COVID brought out so many things in greater relief, you know, issues that you and I and our medical work have confronted our whole careers. And it's just that COVID showed how overwhelming it can be for very low-income people, and among that group, people who are homeless. One of the reasons why I got interested in housing people with health problems, it actually goes back, you know, like you, to my days in a public hospital. So working at San Francisco General Hospital, taking care of homeless people, and noticing that when they would first be brought in, often hypothermic with low temperatures, with electrolytes that were out of whack because of they weren't eating or had intercurrent illness or they were infected, there'd be all of this attention spent on them in the first 24, 48 hours. And then when they were returned to normal labs and no longer infected, everybody lost interest. Now they were just a homeless person and therefore needed to be discharged. And I was just struck, well, gee, we just spent $40,000, you know, to get this person back. And now what they need is maybe $800, $1,000 a month to house them. How is it that we could spend $40,000 on them in the first 3 days and not in any way change the arc of their life? But we can't figure out how to put together the money to house them. I mean, there are many incredibly difficult problems that we confront in healthcare, horrible diseases, metastatic cancers that are aggressive, that take away people that we love. Homelessness is not like that. Homelessness is an entirely curable condition. You can cure homelessness. We know how to do it. And it's even relative to most interventions that we do, it's quite affordable. And, you know, as a practicing doctor, as well as running the system, what drives me crazy, my homeless person can come in and have symptoms that I might attribute to, you know, their stressful life, their poor nutrition, infections, and I can order any test I want and it will be paid for. I can order an MRI, I can order a CT scan, but I can't order housing. I can't actually order housing. And it seems as physicians and healthcare providers, I get living in a budget. I've always worked in the public sector. They've never had enough resources. What I don't get is, well, but why is it that I can order that MRI, but I can't house him? Shouldn't I be able to order whatever the treatment is that would best deliver health to my patients for whatever the dollar amount that we decide is available? And if you tell me that I only have this amount of money to spend, I can deal with that. What I find frustrating is that I can't actually provide the thing that would so change my patient's life, while I can provide expensive things that will not change their life. If we take a step back for listeners, I think it's people might think that homelessness is an unsolvable problem. And so I think it also helps to remember the different kinds of homelessness. There is homelessness that is purely economic. And the world needs to solve, and the US needs to solve, economic homelessness. The person who is housed until they lose their job, the person who is evicted from the apartments because the rents have gone up and they cannot afford it. That is economic homelessness. There is a much smaller group, but group that costs society a tremendous amount, who are homeless owing to a combination of mental illness and addiction. And these people spend huge amounts of money, often in incarceration, in homeless shelters. And when you provide them with supportive housing, what happens is their overall expenses go down and you're actually able to treat them. My goal always is, don't make me treat this person who is homeless, let me house them, and then I'll treat them. Because it would be so much easier for me to address their diabetes and their hypertension and their arthritis if they had a roof over their head, a steady place to get medicine, a way that I could consistently find them, staying out of the elements. We say, well, this person is homeless because they have a serious mental illness. Well, that may be true, but think about the difference between having a serious mental illness and living on the subway, right? Having to sleep on the subway. When I go to bed at night, the last thing I do is lock the door before I climb into my bed, right? Why do I do that? I want a sense of security that while I'm asleep, I'm safe. What if you sleep on the subway? How do you ever get that security? And what does that do to your mental health?
Right, Mitch, you know, I think you've done probably the best job of describing the problem and the complexity of the issues and why it's important to solve. When I was at VA, I practiced in Manhattan at the Manhattan VA, and my very first patient I took care of happened to be a young man who was homeless living in Central Park. In the VA, we had HUD-VASH voucher, a specific program with the Housing and Urban Development Department where we could get people into housing. Is that what you're suggesting? Can doctors and providers in your health system actually order these supportive housing vouchers and get people that they see into that type of housing?
Well, David, in part because of your efforts at the VA, their veteran homelessness has pretty much been solved. I mean, of course, at any moment, somebody will fall into homelessness and you'll have sure. to help them. But the VA has solved it. And again, I'll go back to say, unlike some, you know, awful cancers or very difficult to treat addictions like amphetamines, this is a solvable problem. So to solve it, you need for the people who are just economically homeless, they just need a reasonable place to stay, right? And maybe they need a financial assistance to afford the rent, right? Something that we once did throughout New York in public housing. We're no longer building large public housing places.
Right.
The
right.
people who are mentally ill or suffering from addiction, they need a supportive housing yeah. role. And unfortunately, we have priced supportive housing out of the market, where mm-hmm. it can cost to develop a unit. The most recent figures I've seen, it's $350,000 to $400,000 per unit. The average time from conception of a housing project to the opening is 9 to 11 years. The way we fund supportive housing is this completely ludicrous tax credits. We allocate tax credits, which we give to nonprofits, which seems awfully strange. Well, how could a nonprofit use a tax credit? Well, they can't use a tax credit, but they can sell the tax credit. They can sell the tax credit to a for-profit and then use the money for supportive housing, right? Well, what would be a much better system is if instead of living within the constraints, we asked ourselves, let's solve the problem the way the VA solved the problem. So I can tell you in New York City, about 70,000 people who are homeless, very wow. large number. But there are yeah. only about 1,000 people who are living on the streets with serious mental illness, right? Those are the group that you have to solve for. And if you were trying to solve for that, you'd say, okay, how are we going to open up 1,000 supportive housing beds in, mm-hmm. say, the next year and a half? And that, rather than the way it starts now, which is we need more supportive housing. Okay, who are the providers in 9 to 11 years at $350,000 to $400,000 can do it? Why must supportive housing be built at a standard greater than the apartment I live in?
Right.
No reason. We have in part because of NIMBYism, in part because of a variety of regulatory concerns. We have made the obvious solution unaffordable. And so we really can't. We had some in the LA years, we were able to house about 15,000 people in LA. And it was because when I got to LA, there was affordable property that we could buy or mm-hmm. rent. And then we would essentially insert the supportive services. So it was sort of supportive housing, but it was in regular housing. And we could come up with that housing for $800 a month in general. And that was affordable with the funding that we had. But, you know, my understanding, I'm not as close to LA, is most of that housing no longer exists on the market. We use what was there. And certainly in New York, it does not exist. And so what I would like to do becomes impossible. So what do? We send that homeless person to a shelter. But often if they have a serious mental illness, they're not going to be able to make it in the shelter. So they're going to leave the shelter. They're going to be on the subway. Maybe somewhere along the line, they're going to commit a petty crime in order to get food or in order to get clothing, at which point they're going to be sent to Rikers, where the cost of incarceration is so much greater than the cost of housing people, right? Because security, and there's no reimbursement for medical care from the federal government when somebody is in a local jail. And so we then have this cycle where people go homeless shelter, subway, Rikers, psychiatric emergency room, back to shelter, back to Rikers. And we spend all of this money without improving anybody's life. I tripled the number of ICU beds in 6 weeks at health and hospitals.
Sure.
I could never have done that under normal rules.
Right.
Impossible. That right. Tripling the number of ICU beds with the number of approvals, the time it takes months for me to get an approval to use a mammogram machine from a, you know, leading seller, the inspection. So we were, I mean, not to say that I'd ever want to run healthcare, but we're like at 11 p.m., the IT people are like stapling in the wiring to our electronic health records so we can, you know, turn a, you know, formerly empty ward into clinical care. Right. How were we able to do that? Because the choice was that people were going to die, David. They were, if we didn't get the ICU care, they were going to die. And the rules were waived and we treated it like an emergency. And if homelessness for the seriously mentally ill and the drug addicted could be treated as an emergency, with the idea not of 9 to 11 years, but what would it take to house these people, I believe the problem could be solved.
And as you pointed out, you have a situation with homelessness that is curable. It can be cured. In November, you and New York Mayor Eric Adams together announced a new initiative to connect homeless healthcare patients with affordable housing through this Housing for Health. You've already told us a little bit about it, but are there additional plans for this particular initiative? And the other, of course, is the other social determinants also need to be addressed in addition to homelessness. So you do have food insecurity in this population. There's the problem of violence in this population. So it's a multifactorial problem, but certainly if you can solve the homeless issue, you've come a long way.
Right. Well, I do think that when you solve homelessness, you solve other problems. One of my favorite stories from Los Angeles is of a homeless man who was reunited with his daughter after we housed him because he never wanted his daughter to know that he was homeless. So he was living on the street without any family connection or help out of deep embarrassment and the feeling that it would horrify her to know that her father was living on the street. So I think all sorts of problems become solvable. So our mayor, you know, is terrific on this issue, sees, you know, the injustice of people living on the street. But what we all right now have to do is live within a set of regulations. They're not wrong. They just don't facilitate the solution. They don't make it an emergency. They don't say, but wait a minute, people are homeless today. Why does it take 9 to 11 years to do a supportive housing program? What would be, right, if a earthquake, you know, split off a part of New York and a much larger number of people, you know, 100,000 people were suddenly homeless. Would everybody say, oh, 9 to 11 years, you know, sorry, guess you all have to live in a tent, you know, till we get you going? No, we would get FEMA involved. It would be an emergency. People would say, you can't just let these people live this way, but there the expectation is that they used to be housed. So they deserve to be housed and we're going to house them. The way people look at homeless mentally ill people is, well, these are homeless people and, you know, what are you going to do? Nobody feels that same level of commitment enough to convince the state and the federal and the variety of groups that feel that a solution cannot be made?
Mitch, one of the things that I think was so compelling about COVID was that you had the world's attention focused on one problem, at least for a while. And we saw tremendous progress, particularly in science, like vaccine technology, with public-private partnerships. So what's your message for other hospital and health system CEOs that understand what you're saying, but say, look, I'm just running a hospital or health system. I can't impact such a big issue like this. Is there something that you think about with your other CEOs in New York City who run health systems? Is there something across the country that you think that hospital leaders should be thinking about in this issue, or is it just too big for them?
I don't think it's too big, David. I mean, this is how complex problems get solved, by through collective action. And I'd also say, and I think one of the things that's hampered the solution is the feeling that housing is a different issue, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I always start by saying, okay, there are different kinds of homelessness. I do not think that it is the job of healthcare systems to solve economic homelessness. We're not economic, you know, providers. I do think that it is the job of healthcare providers, whether we're, you know, doctors or administrators or nurses, to address the health needs of our patients. And if we have a treatment that is effective and perhaps more effective than the other treatments we're providing, we have an obligation. People will need to think creatively. So one of the things that health and hospitals did, and it was part of the mayor's announcement, is we said, well, we have land. Okay. So, and that land is already zoned for healthcare. So if we're putting together a housing project focused on people who have healthcare problems, you don't need to go through all of the work, and I'll provide the land for free, and I have. All I ask is that the builder then preferentially house my patients. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that each hospital system needs to look at what they can do, right? And that through collective action, if all of us cooperated to problem solve the way we did in COVID, where hospitals, we transferred patients to other hospitals, and we accepted transfers from other hospitals, right? We saw it because it was aberrant, right? Yeah. We all of a sudden, we had all of these people on ventilators, and we knew that was wrong. And so we went about solving the problem. And I wish that people would do the same thing around housing those people with significant health challenges.
Well, Mitch, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. I think you're talking about issues that are going to make a big difference. And it's people like you who understand this and can articulate it and feel as passionate as you do that are going to be part of solving this solution. So thank you for all you're doing. Thank you for your public service. And we appreciate your time on What's Your Moonshot.
Thanks so much. Great to see both of you.
And Mitch, I would just add to that, I mean, the city of Los Angeles was so incredibly fortunate to have you. Now New York is so incredibly fortunate. You've crystallized the problem. It is a problem that is curable. It obviously, there's lots more to talk about, and maybe we can do this again with you. But thank you so much for participating today.
Alvarez and Marcel, leadership. Action. Results.
So Larry, once again, we see a real leader of a healthcare system, in this case, a large healthcare system, talking about issues that, frankly, I'm not sure we would have heard leaders talking about a few years ago, talking about these socioeconomic determinants and how important that is. And his case for addressing this issue is a pretty strong set of facts.
It is very hard to argue with the facts that he laid out. The fact that there are 1,000 people in the city of New York who do have these mental health issues, who, if you could solve their homeless problems. So many of their other problems, their medical problems, their behavioral health problems can also be solved. And when he also pointed out, as we saw in Houston, the homeless problem is also, and mental health problems are also a problem for the criminal justice system. These are people who go commit a petty crime, they wind up in jail, they're back out, they don't get the support they need, they commit another crime, they're back out there, and some of them wind up dead when they get into encounters with the police. So this is a huge issue, both from the criminal justice side, but more so for the healthcare side. And as Mitch has pointed out, this is curable. And providing public housing, obviously, is incredibly expensive, but it does address a number of others of societal problems as well. So I think that the city of New York is incredibly fortunate to have Mayor Adams and now Mitchell working with them. Whether they're ever going to be able to solve it, who knows? But certainly you have somebody with such passion as Mitchell Katz. If it can be solved, it certainly has got the best opportunity to be solved. So it was a great conversation with him, and his passion is palpable.
Yeah, I think what we didn't get a chance to talk to him about was how you stay in that job for 6 years. And I know when he inherited Hospitals and Health Corporation, it was on the financial brink. So he's really had to do a lot of hard tackling financially to get that place turned around so that he could stay there to be able to focus on issues like this. And, you know, there were times listening to him, I had to remind myself, here's a physician executive leading a health system and not a politician. But, you know, his knowledge of these issues, it all, I love his concept of a doctor being able to order housing the way that they can order an MRI. And I almost wonder whether that doesn't have to ultimately be a ballot issue where the voters of New York say, you know, we're sick and tired of this and somebody's got to solve it. And let's give doctors the ability to order housing.
As he pointed out, the cost of ordering housing is far less, for instance, than the cost of an MRI or the cost of continuing health care for somebody who is homeless. And I think that really resonated with me. And I think that he is addressing a problem that clearly is difficult. The other thing, of course, is he's got to deal with the political forces as well. And the politicians don't really care. These people don't vote. So it's not top of mind for those politicians. And the fact that Mayor Adams has addressed this issue, I think, says a lot. Mayor Adams was a police officer, came up. He understands what goes on in the city of New York. And so I think working with the mayor and hopefully with some of the others in city government, they can make some inroads here.
One of the reasons we do this podcast is to get other healthcare leaders to think about things when they hear their colleagues talking. And something I hope, because we hear this so much in talking to people that run health systems now, I hope that they start beginning to work together, that if there was a group of New York City hospital CEOs meeting about what they together could do about this homelessness issue, or across the country that happening. Of course, Southern California is really where there's so much homelessness. There's got to be something that binds us all together. And I think that this problem can't be solved alone.